At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. And thank you for joining another special episode of You're Welcome. Guys, I am red hot today. We got topics coming in you're not going to believe. Coming up on today's show, I'm hearing rumors about Max Holloway versus Dustin Poirier. They're going to fight for a third time if that goes down, allegedly for the BMF. Plus, I got a story that you're going to have to hear to believe. And I'm going to tell you about a young man I call the Welsh Gangster. I got so much to get to. Plus, John Jones, Stipe, many more things. Guys, let's get started. Brandon Moreno, you know, would you guys leave me a comment, please? Our things here are very social for me. I spend a lot of time at home where I'm in the studio. So our comments and our chats are very social. So when I come and I ask you for it, quite sincere, if you wouldn't mind, but where do you stand with Moreno? Because I feel like I had better start getting on board. And I haven't been there. Now, I got nothing against Moreno. He's just a nerd. And he did something that was wildly annoying for me, but it wasn't his fault. He kept fighting the same guy over and over and over again. Right? We didn't want to see it the first time. That's why it wasn't on pay-per-view. I'm just being real, right? Like, there's a reason it was where it was, in front of who it was in front of. Not for that. Turned out to be just a spectacular event. I'm just sharing for a lot of spectacular events that I didn't want to see. Now, I'm not being a dick about it. I'm trying to set the stage. So now we got to see a rematch. Okay, that was the right thing to do. Still don't really want to see it, but it is the right thing to do because that first one was so damn competitive. And that's what you do when you have a draw. So we see the second one. And then, by God, we got to go and see a third. And I can't remember, guys, there might have even been a fourth. If there has ever been somebody that I was so great, thank you. Thank you. If I can ever do something for you, thank you. It was Figueiredo for leaving the division so I don't have to see him and Moreno again. And it's not just the fight. Like, the fight was actually pretty pleasurable. It's the buildup to the fight. You got one guy that doesn't speak because he can't. He doesn't know the language. You got one guy that doesn't speak. You got another guy that when he speaks, he smiles. He looks like a little boy. He doesn't look like a cage fighter and you're trying to sell this to the public. I mean, oh, my God. Then it turns out when I tell you I better get on board with Brandon Moreno, turns out you guys love him. He is big. He's big. And me sitting over going, oh, he's a dork. What kind of high school bullying mentality is that by me? I've actually never met a person that doesn't like him, that knows him. Daniel Cormier says such great things about him. I got to meet Rowash Jr. Sat and watched the card at the Sphere. Mexican Independence Day, correct? Yeah. Trying to think of what that event was called, and I got to watch it with him, and Brandon Moreno's name came up. Oh, man, it's Rowash Jr.'s face lit right up. Much like Daniel Cormier's Tony, I mean, it lights right up. James Krause had brought him in, wanted to be around him. I mean, James Krause basically recruited him. Hey, you got to come out here. I got some stuff for you, man. You can be champion of the world. Let me help you be champion of the world. Let me help you become champion of the world. I mean, people have to really like him to do that. And so Brandon Moreno's now in a spot. He pops on Errol Hawani's show. And he believes that he's got one fight, and then he's going to be fighting for the title. And if the guy's over, the guy's over. We can be done here. If you guys like him and you want to see him fight, and you're going to mark on your calendar, have some friends over, get a pizza, because Moreno's fighting. Oh, okay, we can all get up and walk out of the room here. It just seems like, boy, he's got a hold of the right tool. It's just by the wrong end. Like, there's something here with Moreno that's amiss for me. The fact that I would talk to him like a high school bully, God, this guy's a nerd. Well, why is he a nerd? It sure as hell isn't because he can't squabble. It's not because he doesn't have heart and grit and guts. He's got all of those things. Why is he a nerd? He smiles a lot? Maybe. Maybe that's where I'm thrown off. Maybe he's too polite in interviews and he doesn't come off like a cage fighter to me. But if he's over, he's over. But I'm asking you. I'm asking you, is he? I know some experts in this sport. I don't know where you get the rankings. I know you guys always have them and it pops up. I don't know where you get them. When I know if a guy is ranked, it's either because Mania or Elbow included that in the story that I just read, or because I just got done watching the UFC and they listed it. Like, Cosmo Chimaev was ranked number 13. I had no idea. I couldn't believe he was that low. I've recently found out Bo Nickel isn't ranked. I've recently found out Paul Craig isn't ranked. So even if Bo gets a jump on Paul or Paul gets a jump on Bo, neither one of them gets a ranking, which is just, it's insane. It's insane because it's dishonest. Hey, rankings room. Bo, see a top guy? Oh, yeah, Bo Nickel. Oh, yeah, he's a threat. Could he be world champion? Oh, yeah, he could be world champion. Can he beat absolutely everybody? Like, you've played the matchup throughs and you're sure he could and maybe even remain undefeated for quite a while as he's done so far. Oh, yeah, Bo Nickel. Yeah, he can do all those things. Okay, great. Can this guy? No, that guy, no. Can this guy? No, of course not. Can this guy? No. Okay, but they're ranked and you ranked them. You did this. You ranked these guys. And you're not ranking him, and I'm only sharing for you, like, I know a lot of people that are in that spot, and I've challenged them before. I said, name five 25-pounders for me. If you want a real literal answer, I've done this four times, and all four did name five 25-pounders for me. But not one of them rattled them off. Not one of them was like middleweight. Where you go, Chimaev, Izzy, Duplessis, Sean Strickland, Paulo Costa, not like that. So, what's Moreno talking about? I got to do one more fight. Why do you got to do one more fight? Who are you competing against? Who is it that you've decided should get the opportunity over you? And when you tell me who that person is, well, let me ask you a couple more things. Are they a former world champion? If they weren't a former world champion, what is it on their resume that you believe they should get the nod over you? Why is it there should be one more fight? And for all I know, there should be five more fights. The foggiest idea. I'm just sharing with you. I'm taking a guy at his word. I'm taking a guy who's main evented at 125. Nobody's main evented at 125. The only guy that could main event at 125 is named Demetrius Johnson, and he ended up leaving. The other guy that could main event at 125 is named Henry Cejudo, and he left the division. Nobody can main event at 125. There is no meaningful piece of business that has been done by a main eventer at 125. So, I mean, I'm just asking. Because if Moreno's not aware of that, and that's what it would appear, it'd appear a bit of a sandhagen. Pro wrestling. We'll do what's called a house show. A house show means you got to be in the house to see the show. We don't have that in the UFC. Though it would be interesting, by the way. But we don't have that. So, Vince McMahon, back when I was growing up, the schedule is they would play Mondays, and they would play Saturday. And that was on television. But they were on the road, and they were performing 252 days a year. So, of those 100 matches that you got on television, two a week, 52 weeks in a year, you have another 150 matches that you don't see. And Scott Hall, in tag team competition, went to some town, and he got beat, right? His team gets beat, and then they get on the interstate, and they drove up the freeway, and they come, and they take on that same team, right? They're doing a program together. They're gonna stay together for a while, and then the booker will switch them up. But you can go do basically the same thing, just don't do the same finish. Just on the outside chance that some guy was in both towns, you want to protect the business a little bit from kayfabe. I mean, you basically are doing the same thing, right? You're riding in the same car together. You're talking about the match. You're talking about how it could be better. You get to the next town. Scott Hall gets to the next town. Happens to be a TV taping. Where he lost was non-TV. He happens to get to a TV taping, and he tells the TV world, I wrestled these guys 2 days ago and beat them. Which isn't what happened. He had lost. Told the world, I beat them. And they get in the back, and the guys come and ask them about it. They go, hey, why are you telling people that you won when we were in St. Paul? Why are you telling the people in Jacksonville that you won when you were in St. Paul? And Scott Hall said, because I'm a heel, and heels lie. And it's not necessarily a heel message you're getting out of that. it's understanding that the people here on camera and what I can do with this microphone is going to trump whatever you did, including succeeding, if it wasn't in front of the cameras. And it's what we call a sandhagen. So when you're not understanding your own position, I have not got the foggiest idea who should be in front of Moreno. But when I do hear Moreno's name, I know it, and I know about him. And I know he's main evented before, and I know he's had world championships before, and I don't believe whoever he believes should get the next shot is a former world champion who's main evented pay-per-views before. So I feel as though he's so close to the trees, he can't see the forest. He can't stand back and look down at the board and realize where his standing is at. But I'm just asking, because I've been a bit of a bully and a bit of a jerk as it pertains to Moreno. So if I'm wrong, tell me. John Jones, undefeated. John Jones, never lost a fight. John Jones, unblemished. John Jones with a perfect record. Do those things matter to you guys? And I've really got to ask, because this talk won't seem to go away, but it wasn't initiated by John. And that's where things start to get very interesting. The idea of revisiting an established outcome a decade plus later is insane. That just that idea that a government agency funded by taxpayers would revisit an established outcome from a decade prior, that is insane. But it's not to say things like that don't happen. They do dig up graves and redo an autopsy. And I realize the comparison there is extreme, but it's one that you would understand. And it's a very accurate metaphor. So, I mean, where does that end, right? In the world of silliness, where does that end? Do we just start forgiving laws because laws have changed now that they weren't then? You want a speeding ticket to come off of your record? Because you were going 35 and a 25, but now they've changed it, and it's now a 35, and so you were then going the speed. I mean, do you see the problem with that? Like, your argument wouldn't actually be terrible. You would have some ground to it. How you're going to get a judge to use taxpayer dollars to hear it to make the argument in the first place? There was no judge that would let that come before them. They would dismiss it, and they would do it with a respect shown to the taxpayer. I mean, it's a fascinating concept. Now, who's pushing for it? If you get the boss that's pushing for it, why? Is it better for business? Now, here's why I'm asking you a question, because I'm not being my usual dick of a self towards John Jones. You could apply anyone to this scenario. Is he more monetizable? Do sponsors care more? Does the pay-per-view move? Does it matter if he's undefeated? I'm only curious at what your answer is. Being undefeated would take his ability to have experienced everything away, but maybe that's a good thing. I'll listen. I haven't fully formed an opinion on that. Should we get to that point? I'm not there yet, by the way. Before you think Chael is saying that shouldn't be reversed, what I'm saying is I can't believe we're discussing a concept where a government agency would even hear it. That's where I'm stuck. I can't believe we have in ground welling of support to get this forward. There is a protocol, after all. There is an absolute protocol. So we would have to start with John Jones filing for arbitration, which he has never done. Now, before you think, well, Chael, he can go and do that now. Well, no, not really. They also have that within the statute of how what your deadline is to file said arbitration. And before you think you're doing John a favor, like, if that is the nobleness of this, do you think it was a silly rule? Go ahead. But do you understand that it was a rule? Yes. Okay. When you watch that match, do you think it was a misapplication or interpretation by the officials of the rule that you just acknowledged did in fact exist? No. All right, what on earth are we doing here then? Our argument, should we get taxpayers to fund this, our argument is actually going to be that a rule that existed and that was applied accurately should not have existed in the first place. So, what do you do to Matt Hamill in that situation? What if Matt Hamill had that same move? It was devastating. Matt Hamill's broken bricks. He's broken boards. He's putting many a good man on accident to sleep in practice with that. What if he has that move? The very move you're talking about. And he saw an opening for it within that same fight, which would change history, change the outcome, and left John Jones flat on his back. But Matt did not go to that secret technique. He did not go to that because it was against the rules. What if? And what is going on in John's life, right? For you to take up this plight, what is going on in John's life that is so bad that even post-mortemists, we like to come back and correct it? And what is so great in Matt Hamill's life that you want to take the one great thing he's ever done and take it from him? Are we not going to discuss that side of it? Do we not discuss that that's the one big compliment that Matt Hamill is given? And he's done a number of great things. I'm just bringing to your attention, there is a winner in that. There is a loser in that. Who the hell's bringing the argument forward? And why? Listen, guys, I'm hearing people say the way that they would rule on this if this came forward, that in and of itself is against all of the rules. All of them. You cannot be a decision maker on a commission saying how you'll rule on something before it's brought to you. But they are. And I'm just curious as to why. What am I missing? I'm open to everything. But if you're going to argue with me, make sure you do understand what I'm arguing. It's not the validity of the rule. We've already acknowledged it was one. It's not the application of the rule. We've already acknowledged, as angry as we are with that referee, it was applied correctly. We even understand it took courage to be applied because it was going to change the outcome of what otherwise was an overwhelming contest that was going to go in the opposite direction. We're not going to the windows to get these repaid. We're not going to revisit John Jones and his salary that night and go cut him an extra check because it shouldn't have been this way. We're not going to do any of those things. And I'm not arguing on what the outcome would or should be if we get into a situation to make that argument. I'm not. What I'm arguing is how odd I find it that this conversation exists. And if that got brought up, I would argue against a government agency on taxpayer dollars offering to hear something that some of them publicly have already ruled on. Diego Lopez, Ilia Topuria, Alexander Volkanovski. I'm not ready to let this go. I thought I was. I'm not ready to let this go. This was real hot for a week. And this is real quiet right now. Generally, when that happens in this sport, guys, something's been agreed to. Like if you ever hear two fighters and they're really going back and forth, just so you understand, particularly if it's a name fighter, this is for everybody. But I mean, this gets extra stressed as you move up the card. Don't tell anyone. You'll get that when you agree to fight. And there's a number of reasons for that. First off, the more feature that the match is, and you never know. When you sign something, you think that's a huge deal to you. You later find out it's not. Sometimes you'll sign something, think that's a hard fight. You'll see that you're damn near the main event. So what the UFC will, and they will tell you, you know, keep this between us because they would like to roll it out in their own way. If it's a big enough fight, they're going to make a feature on it. They're going to drop that during a pay-per-view. Dana's going to announce this at a press conference. The media's going to eat it up. The poster's ready to go. The on sale, the tickets, you kind of drop it all at once. There's just a formula. In fact, if you don't have that formula, you basically don't have an organization. It's that important because everybody will touch that announcement. Your matchmakers who get it agreed to, your lawyers who get the bout agreements, your marketing team, your PR team, your art and digital team, like so many things will go in to that it's got to be all right. We agree. Now hold that thought. Let us go to work, right? And a lot of times, it's too big. The guy just can't keep his mouth shut. He'll want to. Ian Garry just went through this. Ian Garry signed a fight, and he's not supposed to tell us who he signed to fight. So for his social media, he shows a bout agreement, and he shows himself signing it, but doesn't tell us the opponent. Now, I'm not picking on Ian there. That was actually of interest. I'm just trying to prove my point to you that it's really hard for these guys to keep a secret. It's really hard. In their world, in the fighters' world, this is the absolute biggest news. And they will constantly confuse that with that being absolutely big news. Constantly. So I'm sharing that cultural norm within this industry with you so that you do understand when we've got Ilya Topuria, we've got Volkanovski, and we've got Lopez coming at each other from different angles. It started out, who is going to fight Ilya Topuria? That's what it started out as. At the end of the show, Volk jumps out of his seat, runs into the octagon. Well, now we're down to one. It's not really a question of, do we have two guys anymore? Lopez didn't know what time it was and stayed in his seat, but then Lopez came out and he called out Volkanovski. That made absolutely no sense. Where would that fight possibly come from? The only name that should be come back. Now, guys, I'm taking you back, by the way. This is timeline, okay? We're at 8 days ago right now. The only name that should be coming out of Diego Lopez's mouth is Ilya Topuria, because he either gets him next or his next fight is with him. How's that work? He sits out. The next time Diego Lopez fights, it's for the world championship. Now, that might not be the next time the world championship's contested. Possibly Volk's going to take that. But Diego Lopez doesn't have Ilya Topuria's name coming out of his mouth. In fact, he pulls out the only guy that doesn't have two options for fight, only has one option for a fight, and that is Volkanovski. It made absolutely no sense. Then Lopez sweetens that pot a little bit further and lets us know that they're not fighting for the sake of just fighting. They're going to fight in Australia so Lopez can show Volk, I'm not afraid to come to you. And moreover, the UFC is going to put up an interim title, of which the division does not have. What a fool, right? Well, yeah. 8 days ago, Diego Lopez was a fool, or appeared to be. But that brings you to 6 days ago, Diego Lopez, who was armed with a piece of information that none of us had, which was Ilya Topuria said, I don't want to come to Australia to fight Volk. I am the champion of the world. You come to me. I don't start rearranging dates for you, and I don't start getting on jumbo jets to come to you. So all of a sudden, a need for an interim championship, I will strongly argue with. If a champion is not hurt and or sick, you don't intern him. If a champion is just simply unwilling to fight for whatever the reason, the remedy is you strip him. Now, this fight would be way too soon, and Ilya Topuria was not given enough time to call him a closet champion and to strip him. I'm just sharing with you, the idea of an interim title is weird. However, that's where it ends. And I got to point that out about the interim title because I got done talking about the guy's a fool. He's not a fool. He had information we didn't have. And if that information proves to be accurate, Diego Lopez could swoop in, get a fight with Volkanovski, then move on to Ilya Topuria, and it'd be a really excellent way to do things. Really excellent way to do things. Because this division right now, if you're Ilya Topuria, right, this is very relevant to if you're Ilya Topuria, but he looks like the king and he looks at like a, by a lot. He beat the greatest of all time, and he beat the greatest of all time for that weight class. And he stopped the greatest of all time, and he stopped the greatest of all time for that weight class. Like, there is nobody that is remotely close. And so you have this fight with Diego Lopez, which would be interesting. It would be new. It would be fresh. Lopez doesn't look like somebody that's going to go away. And he doesn't look like somebody, no matter how strong you are, you're going to come out, put down, and keep him there. He might be those things, but he doesn't look like it. It works. The story works. Who do you go to after that? I had never stared at the division. I realized how effective it was and how powerful it was that Ilya Topuria cannot be questioned. He is undisputed. There is no meaningful contender out there. He already went through them. Like, it's very interesting. And John Anik gave an example, and it's a very accurate one. We're just throwing names at, but John Anik, and he said this right to Daniel Cormier's face. He said, what Ilya Topuria has done, being an unknown guy, coming in, rolling through the weight class, with stoppage wins over Max and Volkanovski is akin to Alex Pereira coming in unknown that we can see he's dangerous, and in the same calendar year knocking out a light heavyweight John Jones and a light heavyweight Daniel Cormier. It's a perfect example, and that's exactly what happened. And finding contenders are going to be very hard. Finding Ilya Topuria as a contender had to take a road that no other contender went through, which is one that avoids Max. We have not had a featherweight contender for Volkanovski who hadn't already lost to Max. It was just a matter of how can we polish him up enough to get him back in there after they lose to Max. Do they need one more? Do they need three more? And the only contender they had, the only one that made it to Volkanovski without going through Max was Ilya. It was very interesting. But I do look at that division, I go, oh my goodness. First off, I don't know where the push is for Aljamain Sterling. I don't know where that push is. There should be people getting behind him, including Aljo. Aljo seems to be pretty happy with the draws. He's getting real good competition. His life is better. He's a happier, nicer person when you talk to him, just not having to cut that weight. But I can't think of a time that a guy was champion at a division, moved to a different division, and had to do more than one. I could tell you times where they didn't have to do any, but I can't tell you an example where they had to do more than one. Aljo did his one, and we're not even talking about him for a title. In fact, we already got a fight signed for him. I'm not overly angry about that, right? If Aljo's not worked up, who am I to be? I'm just sharing for you. That would seem like a real meaningful contender that possibly could solve the problem in the void that I'm talking about right now, which is outside of Diego Lopez. Who do you want to put in there? But after you do that, you start going to a lot of the usual suspects. Hey, Brian Ortega, where are you at? Oh, you're going to 55. All right, no period. Hey, Uriah Rodriguez. You are absolutely an amazing fighter with a huge bunch of fans, but you don't like to fight very often. Am I right about that? Or do you want in here? Hey, Josh Emmett, right? It's one of these things. That division clears in a hurry. I really hadn't realized that. But I do think the need to start looking at what we could have next, I think that opportunity's there. But the way that works, guys, it isn't me. I don't come and do that. The fighter starts it first. Then guys like me either come in and we make a video laughing and teasing about this guy for having a dream that is so stupid, or we start getting on board with it. But no matter which way we go, that's still the way this game is played. And you 145-pounders have got to start playing this game. Happy Tuesday, and thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. I am back from beautiful Bristol, Connecticut, where I got to cover UFC 308 right there from headquarters at ESPN. I want to tell you on today's episode, I want to give you my thoughts and remind you what I felt happened from Cosmet Chimaev's next fight to where the featherweight title goes from here and so much more, guys. No time to waste. Let's start the show. Let me take you guys down an interesting road, and that road is Fighter of the Year. That is when our industry gets together for the World MMA Awards. That is the big one. Do you guys watch music award shows? Do you watch that? They'll have all sorts of stuff, but the final one of the night is simply called Entertainer of the Year. And whoever wins Entertainer of the Year, that's the big one, right? That's the all-around, to put it into a gymnastics term for you. And when you talk about Fighter of the Year, it sure looked as though that was locked up by a man named Alex Pereira. But that's being greatly called into question now by a man named Ilya Topuria. And who would you give it to? Now, be real careful. Recency bias, boy, that's a real thing. But the attitude of Pereira has taken him a long way. Pereira's stardom and the goodwill that he's got, not just with you, the audience, but even within the organization UFC itself, does come largely from an attitude that he will fight anybody at any time. And should it arise that he doesn't feel good at the time of a fight that he's already said he will do, he will go out and do it anyway. That'll take you a long way. We just don't know that Topuria doesn't have that same thing. He just wasn't put in the position. I'm talking about Topuria. And if you were to talk about great wins, I went back, guys, before I talked to you today. Featherweight. I looked at who's the number eight guy at featherweight. And the comparison I was planning to make for you guys is because that's what Pereira just did. As amazing as he looked, excuse me, he went and fought the number eight guy in Roundtree. So what would happen if Ilya did that? And wouldn't you know, the number eight guy is Josh Emmett. And we saw them fight. And it was a very brutal and a very dominant contest. And it looked like two guys that should not be that close to each other in the rankings. It looked like there was some discrepancy, which now we know, as Topuria being the best fighter in the world, there was. So if you look at it from that perspective, both of them have two wins. Both of those wins came by way of stoppage. Both of them dealt with very tough guys, and there was some back and forth. But Topuria, to his credit in this, did have the absolute best guys, which, by the way, is really the closing of a chapter. John Anik, I'm going to take this thought from him. Credit to John, who influenced what I'm about to tell you. But John said this right to Daniel Cormier and said, Daniel, let's just use a different weight class because Topuria wasn't overly well known. I can relate to that. The day I looked him up, my partner Ryan's telling me how to spell his name so I can type it in because I want to see the real name of Mr. Hand Sanitizer. That wasn't that long ago. And I did not know how to spell Ilya or Topuria, let alone to pronounce them, right? It's one of these things of how far he came and how fast he came there. But so did Pereira. Pereira wasn't well known. Pereira was a little bit older. When he came over into the sport, we thought this is an experiment that we've tested all the way back to 1993 with a striker coming over, and he's not going to go and do all that well. So it was a really big surprise, wasn't it? And he took out some top guys. But John Anik had told Daniel Cormier that if Pereira had come in, at the time when John Jones and Daniel had separated themselves from the field, everybody knew the two best guys, and then you have the rest of the field. If Pereira would have come in and back-to-back knocked out John Jones and Daniel Cormier, he effectively would have closed the book. It would have ended. He took out an era. He took out the right guys. He took them out easily. And John Anik was just suggesting for Daniel that you look at Ilya Topuria to have done the exact same thing. Except instead of it being mythically and figurative speaking, stopping Volkanovski and stopping Max ends an entire era of discussion. The chapter is now over. And I think that that is really powerful. I think there's a massive compliment within that analogy. And there's a massive analysis within that explanation. We have a lot of divisions where we rank these guys, but we all know, standing back, whoever gets the opportunity out of those top 10 names that we put up there, whoever gets the opportunity could win the belt on any given night. At 145, there was a very clear gap. They had fought everybody. Everybody had been given their chance. It had been so long. Some guys even left the division. Some guys are talking about leaving the division. But between Volkanovski and the house that he cleaned and the way he did it, I don't think you guys could even off the top of your head tell me rounds that Volkanovski had lost. I know in Volk's last fight with Max, he did not lose any rounds. I don't think you have a whole lot of rounds that you could tell me that Max lost. Like, these guys had really separated themselves. And that's also what Daniel and John had done. And had Pereira come in and got them, it would have ended the era. But that's not what's happening with Topuria. We are not ending an era. He does not have these guys in his rear view. He does not get to talk about Fighter of the Year and how exciting this was. And when he closed the book and then these guys, and they've got to climb back. And how are they going to do that? Are they going to face each other? Max has already solved this problem. I don't know if you guys heard this. Max is not going back to 145 pounds. That is official. Max has left the division. Did you guys know that? I might have just broke news for you. Volk, on the other hand, who looked great at 55, who was wildly competitive at 155, is coming to 145 and has been told that he, in fact, is going to get the title shot. He was told this before this fight even happened. We believe him, of course. Not only does Volk always tell us the truth, but he was sitting cage side so he could jump in the ring and do a face-off. And by the way, that wasn't guaranteed to be against Ilya Topuria. That could have been against Max. I don't know what your guys' appetite is to see Volk and Topuria again. But I have a pretty good idea what your appetite is to see Volk versus Max again. And I think if you were to juxtapose that comparison against somebody new like Diego Lopez, you would quickly jump on Diego Lopez. But my entire premise to you that Topuria has shut the book on that era is not true if he is given Volk next. It's also not true if you believe he should be given Volk next. And then you got to think about one step further, guys. What if Volk beats him? What if Volk wins? What do we do then? At least we won't have to revisit the idea of Volk versus Max for the thousandth time because Max has maturely and responsibly taken himself out of the division. But what happens then? You just run him back against Topuria in an effort to rebuild what once was an undefeated start, to build him back to stardom, you give him that match again? And it's just one of these strange spots where we would be chasing our tail immensely, or we just don't book the fight, which isn't to say that Volk can't work himself back into it. But it was one of the high spots of the entire evening when Volkanovski went in there. He was not called for it. Somehow Volk got access to the stairs. Did you guys see this shot, this camera shot? So there's there's Ilya Topuria, and he's having his moment. His family's there, and they all look beautiful. And then there's Volkanovski at the stairs. So they ask him, they tee it up for this organic moment. And they ask Topuria between Lopez and Volk, who clearly one of them are next. Which one is it? And Topuria starts working. He says, I want to fight them both, to be honest. And he looks over and he sees that Volk is there. And Topuria wasn't trying to create controversy. He was just the opposite. He was trying to celebrate and have a relief from controversy. And Volk comes up. And I believe that and that alone is going to get Volk the title shot. Had Diego Lopez understood what was happening or what time it was, or had somebody with him that could speak English and tell him, get up there. Get up there and get in front of Volk. Don't give him this camera shot because it can't be run wound. And I won't be a hater on that fight. When that gets booked and announced, I won't even tell you that Volk doesn't have a shot. That's not my message now. But we do have to face with, well, what do we do with Lopez? And do we want to take those kinds of risks? If that's the guy that's supposed to be in there anyway. What is next for Chimaev? And I feel that that's a bigger question and a bigger talking point even than what happened, right? I mean, we knew going into this, he had a 50% chance of winning that fight. It was either going to be Chimaev or Whitaker, but there wasn't a lot of talk of this being a number one contenders match in regard that whoever wins goes next with Dricus. It was always, to my understanding, a number one contenders match in that whoever wins gets to wait for the outcome of Strickland and Dricus. It had always been that way. And when the performance was done, it really was a wow moment. Robert Whittaker has never had his ass kicked on the ground in the whole career, including 170 pounds and the tournament known as Ultimate Fighter. It's never happened. Robert Whittaker, as a matter of fact, has only had his ass kicked twice in his life. Once by Dricus, which was a big surprise of how good Dricus was, which I think is one of the motivations that Robert Whittaker wants to get back in there with him. I think he feels, hey, that wasn't the best me. I agree with that. And the first time that Robert Whittaker fought Israel Adesanya, where Izzy was just too quick. The angles were just too much. And yes, I am quoting Robert Whittaker. So we did have this amazing moment. And we saw it was like the world's fastest tap. Dana gets a picture of it, sends that to Daniel while Daniel is still on the air. Daniel shows that photo to the audience, which we heard from the announce team was a dislocated jaw, but that's not what it was. It was the actual teeth. The actual teeth had so much pressure that they got displaced. Looked brutal, looked very painful, looked like somebody would have every right without any kind of embarrassment to having to tap out and surrender in that moment. But because we got all these things that we just didn't think we were going to have, Because the only negative talk on Chimaev that you have ever heard is a question on his conditioning for championship rounds, should he get there. So when all of this stuff gets erased, now we've got a narrative of is Chimaev next, meaning not as his next fight for a title, thus wait, that the next time the title's contested, Chimaev should be one half of that, thus bumping Sean Strickland out. Not on my watch. Not on my watch are we going to take that from Sean. Now, Drickus had comment on this, and Drickus was rather polite. He said, I felt bad for Rob Whitaker. And you have that camaraderie, right? Even if Whitaker's coming after him, wants to take his title away, you still have that camaraderie after you fought somebody once. So I took this as very sincere, and I like that Drickus said that. I felt bad for Robert Whitaker. Chimaev sure looked great and looks like a top contender. But right there, within that statement, Drickus in no way mentioned Sean or doing that fight immediately and removing Sean. So I went to Strickland, and I asked Strickland, would you give me something that you won't give anybody else? You'd make me look good over here on my YouTube channel. What you tell me, I am going to repeat. If you're not into that, just ignore this whole thing. No, he did write me back. This is Sean Strickland speaking. He said, I am next in line. It has been said, it has been written. Now that's an exact quote. I wish he would have just gone a little bit more with it's been written, meaning does he have a contract? Doesn't say the word contract, but it has been written. After I beat Drickus, then Chimaev can step up. And to the point of Chimaev as a contender, I welcome that after I compete with Drickus. The man, meaning Chimaev, who scammed his fans, became best friends with a murderer, and had to flee his homeland when the leash got too tight. That guy can sit down and wait his turn. Coming from Sean Strickland. All right. Now, I think at a minimum, guys, and I do believe we're going to do this exactly as we've intended. I believe if any of those names I just mentioned, Drickus, Strickland, Chimaev, is to do another fight aside from the title fight, the most likely is Chimaev. And I don't think he's likely to do it. I think he's likely to wait. But I can't imagine a scenario where Chimaev gets that nod and then Sean has to go fight somebody else. It appears that we have two incredible number one contenders. One has the ranking, oh, and by the way, is completely undefeated, and his last two wins were both over world champions. I'm talking about Chimaev getting the jump on Kamara, getting the jump on Whitaker. The other is a former world champion who lost the very belt we're talking about in a very controversial manner. One judge didn't think he lost the fight at all, hence the split decision, but a majority of you also thought that Sean had won that fight. So it sounds like we have the right three guys, and it sounds like now we just have a little bit of a waiting process. Does anybody disagree with that strongly? And I know recency bias, and I know how exciting that is, and I know what Chimaev have done, and wow, but we never did get to address the big issue going into this. The big issue that you guys had, I read all of your comments. Chimaev, my own partners at DraftKings had Chimaev as a 2-1 favorite on this, but so many of you were taking Whitaker. And the big question was, can Chimaev hold up and be a threat in championship rounds? But we really didn't get an answer to that, did we? And we might not. If a guy is too good, we can't hold that against him. If guys can't stay in there to be there that long, Chimaev trained for it. He signed the contract to do it. I'm talking about 5 rounds. And he didn't hold any of his energy back. And that was the most impressive thing. Because while you thought, while watching the Kamaru Usman fight, that Chimaev got tired, while you thought rounds 4 and 5 would be difficult for him, it's not as though he didn't also think that. It's not as though he did not also wonder, can I take this amount of energy I have and can I stretch it for 2 more rounds if I need to? In fact, Chimaev specifically talked to Daniel Cormier privately about this and said, I'm not doing any of those things. I'm aware I'll get exhausted. I'm aware I was exhausted with Kamaru Usman. I'm bringing all my energy right now. I'm going to smash these guys, DC. And then he went out and did that. He did not hold back. An athlete who is not afraid of getting tired acknowledges that he will. Doesn't love that exhausted feeling and state that he's in, but he's not afraid of it. He'll go there anyway. Fedor fit that bill. Fedor loved being exhausted. Dan Gable fits that bill, and I had to go all the way back to 1972. I can't think of a third athlete. But based on what we're seeing from Chimaev and what he's saying, I mean, I'll just remind you, an athlete that is not afraid to get exhausted, oh, by the way, can continue focused on his path while being exhausted, goes on to be a champion. So I do not argue with anybody that say Chimaev's next fight should be for a title. And I don't think we're in the point where we're going to remove Sean and even need to have this discussion. But should we get to that point, that would be wrong. Dricus versus Strickland as planned. Winner versus Chimaev as planned. Unkalaev, boy, that's a handful. Unkalaev is a handful. There's a lot on this. First off, I would like him to get his due. There was a narrative prior to the fight, and hey, Unkalaev, done everything right. You got a great ranking. This is a very difficult opponent. This is a number one contenders match, but you got to look good doing it as a caveat. Now, that's extremely consistent with everything we've ever heard over at the UFC, right? Show, fans come first. I get it. Unkalaev's way of doing that was to put himself at risk and stand up the entire time. Now, I have pled with you guys, as you guys are saying that Unkalaev should be the rightful favorite, as my partners DraftKings have him listed over Pereira himself, because he's a Dagestani wrestler, and that Dagestani wrestling is the hardest thing for a kickboxer like Pereira to deal with. And I've pled with you, letting you know, no, he's not. He's not a wrestler, not according to him. I understand that he can wrestle. I understand that he wrestles a lot, and I understand he's very good at it. But he's not a wrestler. If you went and asked the guy, what are you representing? What sport? Much like Khabib would say Sambo, Unkalaev says kickboxing. That's what he prefers. That's who he ties himself to, and he would like to represent in MMA. And you saw that in his fight with Rakic. There was no wrestling. Not a matter of the wrestling failed or it nullified itself. There was no wrestling. Unkalaev at no part, and this was part of his process of bringing his best skills, his favorite skills, but also satisfying the, you must be exciting. There has been a narrative in our sport for the longest time that the most exciting fights are the ones where the guys stand up and bang. And I had no problem with Unkalaev's fight with Rakic, largely because I understand how good Rakic is. I understand the risk that he was taking. Every movement that Rakic and Unkalaev had, I'm sitting there and I'm juxtaposing, and I watch him with Brendan Fitzgerald, got Dustin Poirier there, and I'm asking them, guys, are you seeing anything? Dean Thomas, are you guys seeing anything that you believe Pereira would have problems with? And that's the great one we got to tie together. Whether he would or not, right? Like, the fight is between those two. We as the audience need to have the imagination. We need to be able to believe that this guy has a skill that this guy can't deal with. It's the art of war. And I think that was not our best version of Unkalaev. I think that that was a toned down Unkalaev for the point of attempting to tune himself up. Trying to be more pleasing to watch made him look less threatening. Are you guys with me on that? Because while you were wrong, the narrative out there that Unkalaev was this great and powerful wrestler that's going to take on a kickboxer, and that story goes back to 1993 and heavily favors the wrestler. While you're accurate about that, you were wrong that he prefers to wrestle. And Unkalaev did stalk his opponent in Rakic, and he did cut him off. And Rakic is longer, and Rakic will offer hands with a lot of power and legs with a lot of power. And Unkalaev felt those, but he rolled with it. He took the power off. He managed to fire back. I think that he looked very good. I just think that people miss, including Unkalaev, I think he misses how much we MMA fans really do like MMA. We don't want to see you laying on the ground doing nothing. That's true, but we don't want to see you on your feet trading shots and parrying and showing techniques. We don't. It's those wow moments. So those are my few thoughts. Unkalaev deserves a lot of credit. Unkalaev had so much on his shoulders to not only defeat Rakic, who's a killer, then he was a 3.5, 4-1 at times favorite to do so. So now you don't get any credit if you do it. Now it's expected is my point. And then he's got to look good. He's got to look good. He's got to be exciting, which is a two-man dance. a hard spot for Uncle Ayub. And you saw Uncle Ayub smile after this fight. It's one of the first times you've ever seen him smile. That was relief. That was relief of everything that he had to go out there and face. So we put Uncle Ayub against Pereira. One guy that will insist we do is Pereira. Pereira hears what you say. Pereira does not love the notion that Uncle Ayub on a mythical line at DraftKings is the favorite. Oh, and by the way, the only favorite. DraftKings put Uncle Ayub mythically against everybody in the top 10. Pereira's favorite to beat everybody in the top 10 except Uncle Ayub. And if Pereira was to stay at 205 pounds and not face Uncle Ayub, I'm telling you right now, the guy that's going to have the biggest problem with that is going to be Pereira. Pereira's not going to let it happen. But I'm not willing to tell you it's going to happen because I don't believe Pereira is staying at 205 pounds. I believe Pereira's next fight will be against Tom Aspinall. I have reason for believing it. I even believe it's going to be sooner than you might think. January. But there's a lot of things that have to happen before we get to that point. The talk of Uncle Ayub, Pereira, look, Uncle Ayub's the right guy. Welcome back, Rakic, would be another thought of mine after that fight. I told you guys all week how good Rakic was. I told you what a threat he was. I told you he can stay in there and go with anybody. Well, he just did with a guy that's basically undefeated and a very clear top-ranked guy. So we had a very good contest. But before we start looking to what's next for Pereira at 205, I'm predicting for you what's next for Pereira is actually at heavyweight. What is next? It is the number one thing that we fans care about. What's next? And we've got such a what's next situation from Saturday that we've tried to answer, and I'm not satisfied with any answer that we've come to. By the way, I mean, let's just go through it right in order. Now, you must understand, I woke up today with what they call the wrong side of the bed. I've woken up on the wrong side of the bed, but I had a great weekend. This was the best UFC of 2024. This was one of the best UFCs of all time. I just don't want to sound when I say that because I amount to recency bias. So I'll just do the year. It was the absolute best UFC. But as far as the storylines go, I don't feel that we have resolved a damn thing. Let's start at 205 pounds, which was designed to find an opponent for Pereira. And you want to know something, the part of the story you weren't told? That would have been a hell of a lot easier to do had Rakic won. The entire time, that would have been much easier to do if Rakic won. It was never discussed. It wasn't built into the story. It was a number one contendership for Uncle Ayub and a caveat that Uncle Ayub's got to look good. You want to know what has solved everything? If Rakic would have won, he would be the number one contender off to 205. He and Pereira would have a little back and forth right now. But I'm not convinced on Uncle Ayub. I am convinced on how great Uncle Ayub is. I am convinced he might be the best 205-pounder in the world. I am convinced that his ranking of number one is correct, and I'm convinced that his contendership and he's darn near an undefeated fighter. Oh, yeah, yeah, I love all of those things. I am not convinced that there was an offering, and not of excitement. I'm not convinced that there was an offering that Uncle Ayub may possess a weapon that Pereira can't deal with. And that was what was truly needed. Not just a fun fight. It was truly needed that as I watch you, and I imagine that you're in there with Pereira, do you have a tool or a skill that I can then also imagine is going to overwhelm Pereira? Now, I get that that's the fight, guys. I do it, 205 pounds. I get that for the simple reason of there's no one else to go to. Like, no one's that good of a storyteller to tell you a story of how all of these guys are healthy and the champion's not fighting number one. This is a very pro-Uncle Ayub piece. I believe Uncle Ayub's next fight will be and should be for a world championship. I'm not convinced Pereira is going to be there. I'm not convinced that when Uncle Ayub fights next for a title, it's not either going to be a vacated 205-pound belt or an interim belt, because I think that Pereira is moving on. I strongly think that Pereira versus Aspinall is going to be Pereira's next fight. But even if we look at those two, those are our two options. We got Uncle Ayub that'll fight Pereira, and Pereira fight Uncle Live wants to, in fact. But you got Aspinall that'll fight Pierre. Pierre fight Aspinall, who in fact wants to. So now you got these two choices. I think you see which one looks to be a little bit clearer. No, stand by on that. That's Chael's theory, but I have a reason that I'm setting that down repeatedly. I'll leave it at that. The only person that'll understand what I just told you is Jesse on Fire. The rest of you, go to Jesse and ask him. Now, let's take a look at Chimaev. Does Chimaev become a number one contender? I would sure think so. But before you tell me and try to stick it in my ear that yes, he absolutely did, and you heard this and you know because somebody told you, I'm just going to remind you to October of last year in a place known as Fight Island. In a number one contendership match between Chimaev and a former world champion named Kamaru Usman. Because Chimaev won that. And he was named the number one contender that night. In fact, he was even offered the fight opposite Sean Strickland. Regardless of how your memory might tell you, Chimaev was actually offered that fight in Vancouver, Canada. And we don't know if it was a matter that Chimaev couldn't catch a plane there. We don't know that. We never got that far. Turned out Chimaev, in the course of the Usman fight, had broken his hand and he couldn't make the date. So, we don't know for sure that Chimaev's next. And if he is, what does that mean? Because that can mean two things. And we're very seldomly confronted with this. Hey, you won. Your next fight is for a world championship. Okay, great. But your ears, again, you might be hearing it wrong. That doesn't mean the next time a world championship is fought for at your weight class that you're involved. It just means the next time you fight, it will be for a world championship. And you only get there when you got really good problems. There are really good problems when there are multiple guys and the audience starts bickering back and forth about who should be given the opportunity. As annoying as you might find that, that's when the sport's at its healthiest. That's when a division's at its healthiest. That's when your time as a fan is the most pleasurable. I do not think there is a scenario where they take that shot from Sean Strickland, who won 5 rounds against Paulo Costa, which is a scary opponent. What Chimaev went out and did to Whitaker, surprising and scary, and it's the same words, but who went first and who was given the promise? Like, Chimaev's next fight could be for a championship against the winner of Drickus and Strickland. But I think that that's the way that we go. But, again, my entire problem with telling you, we got all these storylines, we got all these things we're going to wrap up, they're going to leapfrog us, so we've got a little clearer vision into tomorrow. It's not a little bit clearer. In fact, it's relatively quite unclear. And I think that we need to change that. I think we need to make that real clear. Strickland versus Du Plessis. Chimaev, obvious backup position. Chimaev, you're going to do anything between now and then? That's up to y'all. But I wouldn't rule out that he's not. I mean, Chimaev was named the number one contender after the Usman fight, and he did something between now and then. So, let's see how that all unfolds. You then go and look at 145 pounds. And this is the one. This is bad business by me. It's bad politics. Don't jump in a fight if you can't win. I can't win this fight, and I'm jumping in it anyway. Okay? It's going to be Volkanovski for multiple reasons. He says he was told. To support the notion that he was told in a conversation that we did it here, he's in the front row, they've done a cameo, and they brought him in the ring for a face-off with Topuria. You can't put the toothpaste back in that tube, all right? It's going to be Volkanovski, I get that. But when you have Topuria, who rolled into town and closed a book on everything that we thought was real, he shut the book on the 145-pound division, put them both behind him. When you do that, to bring Volk in is not appropriate. You're forcing an era and you're forcing nostalgia when we've got to let the story tell itself. And the story is that yesteryear within that division is behind us, but it is not perfectly clear that the new guy is the best guy. It's really not. Topuria and Lopez were both there. Topuria was given his shot, took that crown, and he took it walking away. But Lopez has taken every contender, and he smoked them, sending them out the back door. Like, it's really not clear, as you might think. Topuria is better than we knew, but is he the best in the world? Well, he's got to fight his guys, and that's where Lopez comes in. I don't love the idea of waiting on that. I don't understand the idea of waiting on that. And much like with Shemaiah, are you going to give him something to do in between or can he just wait? You have that same thing with Lopez. I understand it's going to go to Volk without illness or injury. I do get we just can't unfry that egg. But what do you want to do? You want to also give Lopez something to do? He's a prize fighter. Gets no prize if he's not fighting. You want to have him wait? Is that a reward? Is that a reward to wait? Is that a good thing to wait? I've never wanted to wait. Has anybody ever wanted to wait? Like, it almost feels like a punishment. Your reward is a punishment. And that's the part of the storylines that get a little bit frayed for me. And as wonderful as the UFC it was, in the three ways that I just described for you, it created more problems than it solved. All right, everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. And a shout out to Todd, who left a comment on Spotify. Nobody in combat sports has a better perspective on how a fight is won before the fighters ever even enter the cage. Thank you, Chael, the godfather of head games. Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it. I'm going to be back for more on Friday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen. And you are welcome.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Max versus Dustin. I know you guys love that. I know I don't need to sell you on that match. I do think that's the direction that it's going. I happened to be sitting with Dustin Poirier. He was two seats down when we were watching the broadcast from Abu Dhabi when Max called him out. And let me back up to that just in case you guys don't know. Right after Max fought Ilya Topuria is the press conference. And Max went to that press conference, right? Max is the last fight of the night. So this is right after 20 minutes. Max called out Dustin Poirier. And there was so much on that I appreciated. First off, on a human level, I did not want Max to have post-fight depression and be down for a couple of reasons. First off, he fought really well. Max fought really well. There was no problems with that fight. There wasn't some weight cut or a training issue or his corner man missed the flight. That was the guy he used for inspiration. Like there was no excuse. He had a fair adjudication. But Max is also, at the time of the press conference, 20 minutes later, he's the reigning BMF champion. Max's next fight, should he want it to be, will be a title fight. So there was really nothing to be down about. There was a way, I understand winning. I understand competition. I understand where that would hurt. But you're talking about reasons to be up. Yeah, Max might have missed his high being world champion and beating Ilya Topuria and how important that was to him. But I'm talking about being down. I didn't want Max to be down. So I liked that he did the call out. But can you get the UFC on board? Because here's the ingredients that you're dealing with, okay? Dustin Poirier, who all of you guys love, versus Max, who all of you guys love. And it happens to be a foreign belt that we all love, known as BMF. Like, everything seems to work, but don't forget, you're not done. It's Dustin's last fight. Dustin would be the favorite to beat Max based on the evidence that he has already beaten Max twice. And I don't want to give this fight a hard time. This is the fight I want. I'm trying to build this. but I want to be real fair and work through it accurately so we can find the right buttons to push if we want to manipulate the system as a community, right? It's not just that Max beat Dustin. Or I apologize, that Dustin beat Max in their last fight. It was a 5-round fight. That's 5 separate fights that are put into, right? I mean, do you agree with me? Have you ever seen a fight or ever been in a fight that lasts up to 5 minutes? Hell no. That'd be the longest fight you'd ever seen, right? Or that you'd ever personally been in. So they did 5 of those. Well, Dustin won all 5 of them. It was 5-0. So let's make a case for Max. Is Max better now than he was then? No. But is Max different? Yeah, he definitely could be. Yeah, you bet your ass he could be different. Because one thing that is different is Max is not playing at 55 before he goes back to 45. He is done at 45. He has made that commitment. He has absolutely closed that book. That's a big deal. And you'll never hear me act like 10 pounds is a lot. But from 45 to 55, it is. It's 7% of your body weight, 7.5% of your body weight. Top of my head there. So Max could be different by the time they fight again. Sure, there are things that he could do to change his physiology. John Jones talked to us and showed us how important that is. It's a massive part of the John Jones-Stipe fight that's being completely left out. You guys will find out when Stipe gets on the scale for that fight. He is 17 pounds of muscle bigger than the last time you saw him. That's a big deal. Really, really big deal. But those 17 pounds for a guy that's 250 represents about 7% of your body weight. So there's a real relevance to that. If it's good enough for Stipe, if it's good enough for John Jones, that same thing's got to apply to Max. So we don't fully know what they're getting into, but it's Dustin's last fight. And generally speaking, nobody's getting a title fight in their last fight, and that is nobody. Now, you could rig the system if you were the champion, for example. It's not to say you've never seen a last fight that was a title fight. Khabib's 29-0, just by example. Georges St. Pierre going up against Bisping, just for example. But it's not often, and it's not ideal for any promoter to do that or even to want to do that. A last fight, a title fight, and right, the entire point of my story, like if you're pretty sure that the belt's going to stay in house, okay, fine. Well, in this case, we're pretty sure the belt's going back to Lafayette. Unless we're not. Right? I mean, if the UFC booked that fight, I feel that that would be a massive nod that the UFC believes Max could be different. That in and of itself might be the most interesting part of the story. That might be the part where you go, hey, wait a minute, these guys fought and it wasn't very competitive. You go, yeah, but the UFC thinks it will be this time. I don't know how else you would interpret that. Now, there is one other thing that you have to consider, right? We're never going to do a title fight on a guy's way out the door. Well, we're never going to do a title fight for a guy on his way out the door who is such a big favorite. Oh, by the way, has already done this not once, but twice. And in the second one, won every single round unless we were trying to get rid of the title. That's a concern that I have. I do have that concern. When George Masvidal left, we did not think we would get a BMF belt. Now, there was a little more to that, which is the night that George fought for it and won it over Nate Diaz, Dana said, this is a one-time thing. There will never be a lineage. There will never be a defense for anybody. Don't even talk about the belt. It's a one-time thing. So when George did come back and George continued to fight, it wasn't really a question of, hey, Dana, where's the belt? Dana had already addressed that. For the smart marks in the room that were listening, Dana had already addressed that. So it was a real treat when we get out to Salt Lake and it's Dustin versus Justin and the BMF belt was on the line. Now, when I say they're trying to get rid of it, what could that mean? Because all we're doing is guessing right now, right, guys? We've got limited information. We're making our guesses on it. But the way I see it, it could mean two different things. One, trying to get rid of the belt. I just can't imagine that. I can't imagine that the numbers don't support the emotion I have. I love it. I love the BMF belt. I think it is one of the most coveted belts, if not the most coveted belt, because of its rarity. For the same reason that the Olympic Games is more coveted than the World Championships. In case you guys don't know what that means, every single tournament, they hold the same tournament. It's the World Championship, every tournament. But every 4 years, they call that tournament the Olympics. All of those sports, all those events, all those competitors, they're competing every single year. Every fourth year, we call it the Olympics. So you see where that rarity makes it valuable. So I couldn't imagine that they were wanting to get rid of the belt. But it is something that we would have to guess. The other thing is, how do we move the belt? How do we move the belt? How would a heavyweight ever get a shot at the belt? I mean, if we start at 170, how would Valentina Shevchenko ever get a shot at that belt if we start with the men at 170 and there's only one of them? Well, one way to do it is to have a guy retire that's got it. That's how we got it to 155 pounds. The guy that had it in Masvidal retired. And I'm just suggesting for you that even if we're not right in the, but we're onto something. Do you see where it not only in most cases would it make sense and would it happen? In this case, it might make the most sense. And it might be the very reason that Dustin versus Max Part 3 happens. Obon Elliott coming up at Madison Square Garden. And what a career this guy has had. I don't know how this guy got to be so tough, quite frankly. I really don't. He was born with a level of DNA. And that's a new concept for me, by the way. I've never really thought of that in all the time that I've been in sport. I got that from a coach of mine. Helped train me. All my big fights. Josh Roden. And he's now working with Nate Engel, of course, Chris Pendleton, but they've talked to guys about that. I got one of my wrestlers on the team, Ricky Bell, and he told me about some conversations he's had with the coaches where they've used that expression, right? These are Division I coaches. They got to hand out scholarships. They got to build a team. They have a job to do if they'd like to keep their job. And one of the things that they will talk about is your DNA. Here's where your DNA can take you. Here's everything that you've done right for a decade with your DNA, and here's where you're at. And it's got my mind working on that a little bit, because there is so much to what you were born with. Equity versus equality, right? You could come further than the competition, but if you started further down, and I'm just sharing, when I do talk about Obon Elliott, he's about the perfect height, and he's about the perfect weight, and his body looks the way that all the other men alive wish that they looked. Like, he's got a certain DNA, but he's got a drive that's higher than his skills. I watched all his fights. He had reached out to me before he got into the Ultimate Fighting Championship. And I was happy to be contacted, but that's happened to me many other times. It just doesn't happen twice. It doesn't happen a third time, right? The guy moves on to some other shiny object, and you know, he got somebody to give him a response. Obon kept bringing me along. He never left me behind. He brought me along when he was trying to be inspired, when he was trying to be motivated, when he was trying to get his weight off, when he was trying to work his job, which was one of the hardest, most honorable jobs you could, but it took all his energy away, right? He's up there swinging that damn pick, 8 hours, 12 hours, he's got no energy, at least in theory. Well, he changed his clothes and went into practice. And that is just a rare kind of guy that will do that with no guarantee. All because he had a dream. And I'll just share for you. I get contacted along the way for something like that, and then they'll move on. And maybe I'll remember that guy. I had a guy contact me. It actually wasn't positive. I'll just tell you this because you might enjoy the story. It was negative. This guy, this skinny guy. I don't know anything about him. He's a skinny black man out of New Zealand named Israel Adesanya.
Yeah, he was a little boy. Yeah.
Yeah, he was about 14. He might have been as much as 16. Had to do with my feud with Anderson Silva. He had taken Anderson's side.
But I remember some of his posts.
I remember this skinny New Zealand guy that had an interest in kickboxing. Anyway, but it's cool when that happens, right? That's fun. I find out 3 weeks ago Moicano was setting up a hit on me. He was going to find me somewhere, and then he was going to hit me. Like I didn't know these things, and I know it's a little bit off topic. I'm just sharing for you. They come, they go.
Obon never left. He never left me behind. He brought me along with his career. I mean, I got to just tell you, like, if there was anything I could ever do to help his career, I would, of course, do that. And he's trying to get in the UFC. He gets there. He gets there, and he does it a couple of ways.
First off, he had the DNA. He had the grit. He put in the time. I mean, right, he went and built his body, went and built his skills. Yes, he did. But
he embraced social media. I mean, the Welsh gangster is out doing interviews that were well over his head.
He did not belong on Errol Hawani's program as early in his career as he got on Errol Hawani's program. He did not belong in a category of guys not signed to the Ultimate Fighting Championships that had a very meaningful base on Twitter. And even if you look and go back and you want to look at the size and go, I think I could do that. Yeah, but if you look at the engagements and the interactions, like he was building a real base that was supporting him. And all along the way, he remained nice. And that's one of the tricks that you don't know.
There's a guy somewhere, I don't even know who to credit this to, but it was on a Kevin James project. And I think it might have been Todd.
I'd love to credit the person that said this because I'll remember it forever. But they said to make a product, and they were talking specifically about a movie, but to make a product, you need three smart people. Everyone else has to be nice.
And it's incredibly true.
But you'll hear it told other ways. You'll meet coaches, you'll meet teachers, or even your parent will tell you at some point, I don't care if you like me. I'm going to teach you the right way to do it. No, you had better care. You do care. The message you're giving is false, but then kids grow up and they go and they say the same thing, or they even get an idea in their mind that it doesn't matter if I'm liked. Yes, it does. It is a popularity contest. There is nothing in life that you will ever do that isn't a popularity contest. There is no interview you will ever go into. I mean, I'm just sharing.
So many guys will turn into scumbags. They just will. They'll reveal themselves. They were acting. They can't hold the act anymore, and they don't feel that they need to because they've gotten to where they're trying to be. It's a very normal thing. I might have even just described you to some level. I'm just sharing with you. It's not what Obon did. I was out at one of his fights. He'd come up and said hello to me, and it was a big thrill for me. You know, it was a big thrill for me, and he was acting excited to meet me, but I was so happy when he came up. He came and found me. He fought down below. He got all the way up. That is not easy to do. He's got to get through the people that he just fought in front of that are going to be pulling on him and grabbing him. He's still in his fight gear, right? I mean, there was no way to mistake him. He's got to get all the way up to where I am, and then he's behind me, and he yells, Jail. And he goes, it's Obon. I remember right where I was. I jumped out of that seat so fast and ran up to him, and later that night, I met his friends. That's a really big deal. Because Obon doesn't come from money. Which means his friends don't come from money. But I met his friends. I wasn't there. He was here. Which means his friends came here to watch him. See, that is a major sign of who you are as a human being. If you can get your friends, your neighbors, your peers, your classmates, your circle that's been riding with you to want to support you so bad, they will make the arrangements. They will save up the resources. They will book the tickets. They will get the passports. I'm just sharing it. It really does speak to who a person is, and it's a bit of a triple threat from Obon. He's got the skills, came with the DNA and the grit. Little boy that had a dream and never lost sight of it, right? All discipline is remembering what your goal is. That's all It is, but it's a very hard thing to do. And he embraced social media. He was a smart guy. He's out there swinging and breaking his back out on the railroad all day, right? But it turned out he wasn't just thinking about driving that post-dinner. When's my next break? Turned out his mind was working. When he was out there working and building his body, his mind was somewhere else. His mind was becoming a star. His mind was getting noticed. His mind was putting a little marketing plan together that then he actually had the foresight to go and do. And when he did the whole thing, he stayed nice. He's a real triple threat. I mean, I'm just going to share with you. You ask how you get in the UFC. It's one of those questions. I could tell you exactly how to win a Super Bowl. I could tell you where you need to go in college, what your GPA is, how you pass the clearinghouse. I could tell you how you enter the draft. I can tell you to get associated with the team. I explain the playoffs for you. Have more points than the other guy. When time runs out, advance your way through. I could tell you exactly how to win a Super Bowl. I can just tell you when it comes to getting in the UFC what other guys have done. And there are guys that have done it the same way. Everything I just described for you for Oban Elliott is exactly how I would describe Anthony Smith. But he never got somewhere and forgot how he got there. And that's a special kind of person. The fighter, yeah, man, this guy can squabble. He's about to fight at Madison Square Garden. He went from a railroad with a guy with a dream, thanking Lord in heaven above that he got an airtime on Errol Hawani's show. He's going to be fighting at Madison Square Garden. So, it's quite a story. Quite a story. There's a lot more to it. I'm just getting started, but moving forward, learn the name. I am going to tell you more about Oban Elliott. Gosh, there's this fight. It wasn't in America. It was actually a beautiful promotion. Production looked great. You guys might have seen it. This clip is going everywhere. I don't really like to get up a judge or a referee's ass, not by name. I enjoy the controversy. I enjoy people judging people because it's the most unfair thing in the world. And it creates controversy, which is the sole reason that we have that. It's the sole reason that sport has people judging other people. People go, why don't you take that away? Why don't you do this? Why don't you do this? Because we want the controversy. But nobody could ever say that. But that's the answer, just so you know. And I want it too. So I love to pick on judges. Sure. What's more fun than that? You should have seen this and you should have seen that. And how did you miss this angle? Of course I love doing that, but not by name. Like, if I want to pick on the judges, I will do it in that term. The judges. Broad stroke. And I will just tell you one of the reasons for that. I used to like to pick on referees. I just thought it was part of the sport. I was a little kid and I started 8.5, 9 years old. That was just part of the sport. I'm at wrestling tournaments, the whistles are going off and somebody's arguing with a referee and then you go back over and it was just part of the match. It was one of the most fun parts. Oh, how did you see that ref? I mean, it actually helped the day to go by. Until I was at a tournament that was short referees and I refereed. And I will tell you what, your opinion of arguing with officials will change when you go out there and you're the official, which, by the way, you know full well, I get some wrong. This is happening fast. Some of these are judgment calls. I've got to score the sport of wrestling. I got to score that. And now he's already on to another score. I got to score that. Well, I'm actually thinking about the first score. Did I get that right? He's on to a third score. Oh, the opponent's coming back. It's one of these things which to lose track of or to never have really had it in the first place. There was an angle. There was a turn. Hey, was that three? Was that two? Right. You take a guy off his feet in the sport of wrestling, you can get 1 point for that. You take a guy off his feet in the sport of wrestling, you get 2 points for that. You take a guy off his feet in the sport of wrestling, and you go right to his back. You used to be able to get up to 5 points for that. But if it wasn't high altitude enough, you would get 4 points. And then if it was just feet to back, you would get three. Do you understand? Do you understand where this can get really hard, really fast? And you're trying to look at certain angles. People are upset with you. They're calling time out. What are you going to do? And I'm only sharing that with you. Like, it is fun to come after judges for sure. Oh, that judge has got this wrong for sure. And some of them are brutal.
But I prefer to do it in that form and not come after name. Now, I preface it with all of that because I don't know this referee's name, but I am putting it on the referee. And if you see the clip going around, you see him. So I'm singling him out, but this clip is going around. It's not something that I can do about that. All right. So this fight is happening. This guy gets put in a Von Flu choke. Now, there was once upon a time called Jason Von Flu. And he was fun. And he was dangerous in front of everything else. Like, there's a lot of people that will tell you Jason Von Flu was really good. Yeah, he was. But that's not the right word. He was dangerous. There was nobody that he couldn't beat because he had a couple of positions that if he finds them, it does not matter if you're the world champion. He will beat you. And by the way, you will go to sleep. He was one of these guys. Dangerous, right? Okay. So Jason Von Flu did a choke several times. Choke gets named after him, the Von Flu choke. We're a Von Flu choke, but a Von Flu choke happens specifically. The top guy is submitting the bottom guy. Not a lot of submissions that way. Right, Hoist Gracie showed us since 1993. It's generally the bottom guy that is looking for the submissions. The top guy is looking for the positions. Okay. So a top guy is doing it. You're going to miss that. If you don't know what you're looking for, you're going to miss that. And then, by the way, it's very subtle. It's extremely nonviolent. One thing about Jason Von Flu, he whipped a whole bunch of people. He wouldn't hurt anybody. And... But I offer that again. You're not going to have tells. You're going to have to know what you're looking at. And it's also done, and most importantly, from side control. So they're in side control. The top guy is applying the Von Flu choke. The bottom guy has lost consciousness. And the referee missed it. All right. We could stop there. There's ways to get choked out. When a ref knows you're getting choked out or it's the process, there's also tricky ways to choke a guy. I mean, ask anybody that followed wrestling in the 80s that knows Mark and Dave Schultz. They would put people to sleep. You have no idea the guy was even in danger. And that's a wrestling match where that's not even allowed. I mean, I'm just sharing for you. Like, there are ways to put a guy to sleep. The second you see it, you break it, you make a call, you go from there. And I could live with that for this referee. It wouldn't be great, but I could live with it. I wouldn't be making the peace right now, and this wouldn't be viral, but he's yelling at the bottom guy. So the bottom guy who is unconscious, the referee is yelling at him for activity. Activity, you got to get busy, you got to do something. He's yelling at him. And my problem with that is now we've got two pieces of the rule you don't understand. Nobody should fall asleep on your watch. That should not happen. I'm just sharing for you. I am lenient and understanding enough. More lenient and more understanding than most. But enough that a guy could fall asleep on your watch and I won't call you out. Now, nobody should fall asleep on your watch, but it could happen. And a Von Flu choke, boy, it doesn't look like much, and it's kind of tricky. It's done with the shoulder. It's not even done with the hands. Like, there's some stuff there. And, but there is not a scenario where the bottom guy for inactivity will get brought back up. That would be a scam. A bottom position sucks. You learn how to fight there because sometimes fighting sucks. You get put in a bottom position. But it's, you don't want to be on bottom. It would be a gift if the ref would just bring you up. If you're into that kind of thing, you could watch sport where they do that. They're boxing and kickboxing and things like this, right? It's an important part of MMA. Nobody wants to be there. There's a number of guys that are trying to sign you up to their gym for $45 a month, and they'll tell you you want to be there, and they'll show you what to do. Nobody wants to be on bottom. But that's relevant to the fact. Like, if you could go on bottom and just not do anything as a way of punishment, they're going to bring you up. No. You want to be up. Are you still understanding the concept? So there is not a, that would be a reward. If you're stuck on bottom, it would be a reward, particularly in side control. I've only seen one fight in my entire life that was brought to his feet when it was in side control. Who was that, by the way? Was that Andre Arlovsky, Roy Nelson? It was a Strikeforce fight or Elite XC. Is that the one I'm thinking of? Side control, and the referee brought up to the, I've never seen it in my life except that one time. So now you've got side control. You have a guy that's being choked. In fact, he's unconscious, but you have a referee yelling at the bottom guy for activity. If he's not active, what do you want to do with him? You can't put him on top. That's not the way the sport is played. You can't bring him up to his feet because it's a reward. So what do you want to do with him? Which is the very reason
you don't warn bottom guys for activity. Referee is warning a guy that he shouldn't be talking to, and he's warning a guy, demonstrating he doesn't understand what's happening, while simultaneously the guy is unconscious. Now, I believe in baseball rules. 3 strikes and you're out. This is only 2. But make no mistake, we are keeping track.
All right, everybody. That is it for today's episode. I want to thank you for listening. And if you enjoy these episodes that come out every Tuesday and Friday, then I suggest you leave me a review or go to Apple Podcasts. You can even submit a comment on Spotify. I hope you all have a great weekend and that you come back for more on Tuesday. Until then, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.